from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
About 2 to 3 hours ago tonight, the Hong Kong Federation of Students issued an open letter asking for a meeting with the Chief Secretary representing the Hong Kong government to discuss one item, and this is the constitutional development of Hong Kong. We have studied the letter in detail, and I'm now appointing the Chief Secretary to represent Hong Kong government to meet with representatives of the Hong Kong Federation of Students to discuss constitutional development matters.
That was Hong Kong's Chief Executive, C.Y. Leung, speaking at a press conference Thursday, the day that protesters in Hong Kong said that if he didn't resign, they would step up their actions, including occupying government buildings. Protesters numbering in the thousands have occupied several key areas of the city, pressing for certain changes in electoral procedure. On Thursday, Leung reiterated that the government will discuss constitutional development with the public, but it must be done peacefully, rationally, and in compliance with the basic law.
I appeal, and I've been appealing to protesters that we should all follow the basic law, which was promulgated 20-something years ago. We should work within the framework of decision of the National People's Congress, Standing Committee, and so on and so forth. Only do we follow the provisions of basic law and the decisions of MPCSC can we have universal suffrage in 2017.
We have more on this from the Chinese news agency CCTV.
It's understandable that different people may have different ideas about a desirable reform package, but it's definitely better to have universal suffrage than not. It's definitely better to have the chief executive elected by 5 million eligible voters than by 1,200 people.
Hong Kong Chief Executive Leung made the remarks when speaking at the National Day reception. He said Beijing has confirmed one person, one vote will take effect for the election of chief executive in 2017.
An editorial by Martin Jacques has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian on the Occupy Central movement in Hong Kong. Under the title, China is Hong Kong's future, not its enemy, the article reviews Hong Kong's political history. It says all its 28 subsequent governors were appointed by the British government during the 155 years of British colonization, and Hong Kong never enjoyed even a semblance of democracy. It continues that after the handover in 1997, China has overwhelmingly honored its commitment to the principle of one country, two systems. The author concluded that the protests are mostly driven by resentment toward the Chinese mainland. He argues that after the handover, Hong Kong has lost its role as the gateway to China, and China is the future of Hong Kong. Russia Today also published its own opinion editorial. It says foreign intelligence agencies have a freer hand to operate in Hong Kong, while opposition figures regularly meet Western diplomats. The article added that the protest leaders recently visited officials in Washington and London to request support from Western government, which have championed the pro-democracy movement.
Meanwhile, China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi met Wednesday with the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, and the subject of Hong Kong came up. We have this report from CCTV.
Foreign Minister Wang Yi called the Hong Kong protests a local matter for China.
I believe for any country, for any society, no one will allow those illegal acts that violate public order. That's the situation in the United States, and that's the same situation in Hong Kong. We believe that the Hong Kong SAR government has the capability to properly handle the situation in accordance with the law.
Wang said China was willing to talk about a range of regional and international issues, but Kerry said he would raise the Hong Kong demonstrations in their meetings.
As China knows, we support universal suffrage in Hong Kong according with the basic law. And we believe an open society with the highest possible degree of autonomy and governed by rule of law is essential for Hong Kong's stability and prosperity. And we have high hopes that the Hong Kong authorities will exercise restraint and respect the protesters' right to express their views briefly.
Apart from the Hong Kong protests, Kerry thanked Foreign Minister Wang for China's contribution to tackling the Ebola crisis and commitment to fighting terrorism. There are, of course, other areas where the two powers have their differences, from cyber warfare and close-in reconnaissance flights by the US to disputes in the South China Sea. And that's all without the added complication of Hong Kong.
A UN human rights report will address the finding of mass burial sites near Donetsk in the eastern Ukraine that, according to UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric, on Thursday. The report will cover the period from August 18 to September 16 and will be presented in Geneva and Kiev Friday. Russia reported the mass graves, which were found on September 23rd, to the UN Security Council last week. 2 days before the graves were discovered, the area was vacated by the 25th Airborne Brigade of the Ukrainian Army, which had controlled the zone for a long time, according to Russia's UN envoy, Vitaly Churkin. 7 Libyan government soldiers were killed and 50 wounded in a double suicide bombing and clashes in the eastern city of Benghazi Thursday. 3 soldiers were killed when 2 cars loaded with explosives drove into an army checkpoint near Benghazi airport. That, according to the commander of Army Special Forces in Benghazi, 4 soldiers were killed in clashes with insurgents in the same area. And 3 people were killed when a Taliban suicide attacker struck an Afghan army bus in Kabul Thursday. A deputy spokesperson for the Defense Ministry confirmed the suicide attack on a bus carrying Afghan army staff, reporting 3 killed and 8 wounded in the attack. The Taliban reportedly claimed responsibility for the attack in a text message. After the close of the UN General Assembly's annual public debate session Tuesday, this year's Assembly President, Sam Kutesa, met with the press Thursday to outline what sounded like an exceptionally full agenda for action over the coming year.
I wanted to summarize for you what I think were the major issues that we talked about in the debate. The 2015 Development Agenda, whose overarching objective is the eradication of poverty and hunger. And as you know, my theme has been delivering on and implementing a transformative post-2015 Development Agenda. We will build on the success and momentum of the Millennium Development Goals, which end next year. But we must now formulate an ambitious, inclusive, and transformative development agenda that will benefit the livelihoods of all peoples. The need for adequate means of implementation is going to be key. Financing of that agenda is going to be extremely key. Transformative technology and capacity building in developing countries is also going to be important. And we need to find methods of financing which we believe need to bring on board private sector, civil society, and other multiple stakeholders over and above what is normally the ODA or official development assistance that finances these agendas. Peace and security was also a major feature that was discussed in the debate. Threats of terrorists and extremist groups like ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram were discussed, and many heads of state made comments on this, which I think everybody was calling for a unified global response. the other issue that was talked about mainly was further strengthening cooperation between the United Nations and regional and sub-regional organizations to try and optimize the synergies between the UN and the regional organizations, especially in conflict resolution and also peace building. Most speakers spoke very clearly on climate change, and I think it is very interesting to see the appetite, the growing appetite to discuss a binding treaty on climate change. I believe that more than ever before, I have seen more people and more heads of state, more countries talking about the need for a binding agreement on climate change. Another issue that was being raised constantly in the debate was the rule of law, human rights, and ensuring that there's governance, good governance in all our countries. Ebola also came up in West Africa as a major concern, and I think appreciation was being registered because of the initiative taken by the Secretary General and the General Assembly and Security Council to establish a UN mission in West Africa, which is going to coordinate all the efforts and assistance for the countries that are affected. These were largely the main issues that came up in this debate, and I thought I would bring them up to you.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. The first question will go to the chair of the United Nations Correspondents Association.
Thank you very much. On behalf of the UN Correspondents Association, thank you for a very busy General Assembly, and thank you for briefing us. I'm Pamela Falk from CBS News. My question is, you did mention all of the issues that were discussed, and Ebola, ISIS, climate change were by far, in a way, the most that were discussed in all of the addresses. You had set the post-2015 development agenda as your priority. Are you satisfied that enough was discussed about that to move forward?
Literally, in every statement that came up, the post-2015 development agenda was talked about. And I'm satisfied that now we can move and settle down and do the real work. As you know, there have been a number of working groups here in the 68th session. One of them was drawing up the agenda and goals. It has submitted its report. They have identified about 17 goals. There is another group that has been working on methods of financing and implementation of this agenda. Another group has been on technology and technology transfer and capacity building. All these working groups have submitted their reports to the Secretary General. Secretary General is going to do a synthesis report to the Assembly, to me and the Assembly, and it is then that the negotiations begin. So I'm satisfied that everybody showed the importance and need for a transformative agenda, and now the work begins.
Thank you.
Yes.
Joseph Klein of Canada Free Press. One subject I did not hear you mention is Security Council reform. I did hear that referenced in a number of speeches. Some have called for expanding the number of permanent members, of course, reform of the veto. Do you still look at that as one of your priorities for your term? And did you have discussions on the margins of the General Assembly to get sort of a pulse of member states as to where they were on that issue? Thank you.
Yes, you are right. It was one of the issues that was talked about repeatedly in all the speeches. Well, it is very clear that many people, many countries, or everybody actually realized that the United Nations, which was started soon after the war, 70 years ago almost, and the structures it had then need to be changed or modified for the current to be relevant to today's world. When it was formed, there were 51 countries. We are now 193 countries. The situation has changed tremendously. We have gone through the end of the Second World War. We've been going through the Cold War. Other countries have emerged. Countries that were colonies are now independent. Now they so therefore need. From the discussions we had, there were calls for this reform. As you know, these calls have been ongoing for the last 10 years, and every time it is repeated. But I think what we need to do is to move forward. We may not complete it in this session. We may not even complete it in 5 years. But I think we should have some text which we can have to begin to have a negotiation. Everybody has repeated their views about the need. Some groups have put forward how they think the changes should be. My task this year would be to try and get all the groups to agree that we have a text on which we can begin to discuss, because now we are just repeating each other's old positions.
Thank you.
Matthew Lee, Inner City Press, on behalf of the Free UN Coalition for Access. Thanks for the briefing. I also wanted to ask about other topics that I heard come up repeatedly, one of which was, and I wanted to know just whether you heard them and what you think of them. One had to do with the embargo or blockade on Cuba. Many countries often late in their speech raised this. And do you think there's anything that can be done by the General Assembly on that? Also, as to the UN itself, the issue of the UN having allegedly introduced cholera to Haiti was raised by at least St. Vincent.
Sorry?
The UN having brought cholera to Haiti and refusing to recompense people there was raised by St. Vincent's and Grenadines as something that hurts the image and legitimacy of the United Nations. And I wanted to know your view on that. And then just finally, I heard you say at the end of the session that you hope in future years there's sort of fewer – I want to make sure I understand this – fewer side events that sort of take away from the big stage. And whether the population event, which I covered – ended up at midnight with people not able to speak. What do you think can be done in future years to make the whole week center more on the speeches given in the general debate? And should there be as many side events as took place this year? Thanks.
Well, with regard to Cuba, I have said, and many countries have said, and called upon the United States to lift the embargo. I think it is right. The embargo was imposed many, many years ago. And I think maybe the circumstances, even when it was imposed, have changed. Secondly, I think what can the United Nations do about it? The United Nations can only call upon the government of the United States to lift the embargo. It will be a bilateral decision. Now, with regard to Haiti, I didn't get your question properly.
It may not be as high profile an issue, but it comes up in this room a lot, and I heard at least the foreign minister of St. Vincent and Grenadines say that given that the UN introduced, or he said it as a fact, introduced cholera to Haiti via the peacekeeping mission.
Cholera,
the disease of cholera,
yes,
which was never in Haiti before, suddenly took off after the peacekeepers were deployed, that he believes the UN should accept its responsibility, otherwise that its legitimacy in its other peacekeeping missions is hurt. Maybe you didn't hear him say it. I just wanted to ask you about it.
I didn't get him, but what I think certainly is the important thing is to deal with the cholera. Mm-hmm. Make sure that it's stopped. I don't know whether you introduced it or didn't. I think the issue is to make sure that it is dealt with and stopped. But more importantly, that similar situations, if they did exist, don't occur again in peacekeeping missions.
Sure.
I think that there are too many side events with regard to the when we have this 1 week. But it is understandable because that's when everybody is here and everybody wants to take advantage of the meeting here in New York to follow up and have meetings with other people. But I think we should reduce the number of side events. We should reduce the time, the length which the people speak, and maximize the general debate. I also found that I don't have to say it, but I think I quietly whispered to members. I think every mission should be able to send someone to sit in, because sometimes when the debates go on so late, someone is addressing an empty chamber. I think someone from these missions, whatever level, should be there to listen to the contributors.
Nizar Aboud, Abu Al-Mayadeen Television in Lebanon. My question is regarding terrorism. Of course, this was a dominant subject. Most of the delegates spoke about it. However, we still lack the definition of terrorism, and thus it is used conveniently, labeling things terrorists here, and other terrorist actions could not be labeled as terrorists. Also, we see that some countries are still equipping, financing, and helping, abetting terrorists in order to carry out the attacks in other countries. Do you believe that there should be some kind of discussion about to renew this momentum and speak exactly and label who is terrorist and who is not terrorist, what categories can be labeled as terrorists? The definition should be revisited, I believe. What do you think?
Well, I think that this is not a new definition of terrorism has always been different from time immemorial. If you recall, the late President Mandela, until a few years to his death, he was on the list of terrorists. Well, I think Mandela was not a terrorist. I think he was a freedom fighter. So you'll continue having different people defining terrorism differently. But there is terrorism, which I believe is wanton killing of armed people. Why would you kill women and children and not combatants? If you want to fight even for freedom, fight combatants. But why would you target innocent, unarmed people, like children, like women? Like, I think this is terrorism. Then there's this terrorist ideology itself, the ideology of killing and beheading and bombing. And I think that's the type of terrorism I'm talking about, and I think everybody agrees on to that. What was clear in this General Assembly is that everybody who talked against terrorism talked about having a unified approach towards fighting them. And I think that came through often, that we should correlate our activities in fighting, whether it is ISIS, whether it is Al-Shabaab, whether it is Al-Qaeda, whether it is Boko Haram. Everybody was saying these are faces of the same problem, and we should have a unified approach in fighting.
Just a follow-up on that.
According to your definition here, what happened in Gaza recently, targeting whole families, killing hundreds of children, whole tower blocks were demolished, is also an act of terrorism, isn't it?
I think that what happened in Gaza is obviously terrible when you watch the children being targeted. We need evidence. Yesterday, it is true that the Israelis were bombing these targets, but also there was a claim that the rocket launches were being launched, people were being used as shield, as human shield, and this brings in a contest. Who is actually carrying the terrorist act? Yes, it is wrong to kill civilians, and I think civilians should never be killed, particularly women. But it is also equally wrong to use them as human shield. So I don't know. You will define terrorism from whichever angle you look at it. But I think the killing of civilians is unacceptable. Women and children, all of us don't accept that.
Thank you, Mr. President. Edith Lederer from the Associated Press. You just mentioned terrorism, and certainly it was spoken about in almost every speech in some way. And you just said that one of the things that struck you was that a lot of presidents, foreign ministers were also calling for some kind of a unified approach. Coming out of the General Assembly and looking ahead to the rest of your year as president, what do you think the GA can do to try and promote some kind of a unified approach? And what was your feeling coming out of this assembly on the will, the intention to actually do something concrete to try and tackle terrorism?
I think from what I have been seeing in the debate and what I think the people are talking about, the approach is multilateralism as opposed to unilateralism. There are wars that have been fought using avoiding UN institutions. For example, approvals, and I think that unilateralism has led into more conflict than when we have had a multilateral approach. If you see now, I think even in the Middle East, coalitions are being formed. A coalition is being formed of many people rather than unilateral national actions. I think to me this is the approach, and I'm glad that that is what was being canvassed by most of the leaders who spoke, presidents and ministers. What can the UN do? It is to encourage the use of multilateral approach and formation of coalitions. I believe strongly myself that regional organizations are important players in dealing with conflicts within the regions. So I think that this approach, return to multilateralism, is a much better approach than some in the past where unilateralism had taken over.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President, for this briefing. My name is Abadi from the Dossier Press. Yesterday, the foreign minister of Eritrea strongly criticized the United Nations. And among other things, he said that the UN has fallen far short of playing the primary role in the pursuit of fundamental objectives for which it was established, and that its institutions structures are an anachronism in the modern world. Number one, is he exaggerating? Number two, you mentioned that there is need for change, especially with respect to reforms of Security Council, and that the states are only repeating their past positions. Do you think the time has come for the holding of a general conference to reform the United Nations as prescribed for by the Charter? Thank you.
Well, first of all, I think that when the Eritrean minister spoke, there may have been exaggeration in some quarters, but I think he was referring again to reforming the Security Council, to reforming the General Assembly, to reforming ECOSOC, to make it more relevant to today's times. And I think there is a case for that. If you're asking me whether the time has come, I think the time came a long time ago.
Thank you.
Yes, and I think a general conference, I don't know, but I don't know the best method, but I think if we study and see that that's what is provided by the Charter, so be it. Let's have a general conference.
Thank you. Time for two short questions.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Stefano Vaccara for Radio Radicale in Rome and La Voce di New York. I have to go back to the Security Council reform, and because I would like from you some more specific, I understand maybe you will not be able to answer as the president of the General Assembly, but at least maybe the answer will be in your national capacity. And it's not 10 years, it's actually 20 years that there is these issues coming along with there are countries that present a reform, other countries, group of countries that present an opposite kind of reform, and everything stays the same. This here, we just heard, for example, the Japanese Prime Minister, in his speech, Abe said, it was very direct, we want a Security Council permanent seat. We deserve it, and so on. And with Japan, there is also Brazil, India, and Germany. Africa should have it for both countries. It would be more difficult to find the country that deserves this. The question is, do you think that there is two groups that are so apart where the Italian Prime Minister, they say this will be undemocratic and actually will pull the United Nations back. Do you think it's realistic to, you just say, a document, we need a written document. Do you think it's unrealistic to talk about Security Council reform when there are those positions, they are so apart from each other?
I have not had anybody who says there is no need for reform of the Security Council. And I haven't had any voice, including the permanent members of the Security Council. What you are saying is, for example, the difference between the G4, on the one hand, which is Germany, Japan, Brazil, India, and your country, Italy, Pakistan, Argentina, they are in another group. Africa has the Azurini consensus. And then you have the L6-9 group. What I have seen is that all of them agree that there is a need for change. And the document I'm talking about is a synthesis of their positions that says in order to achieve this change, we must all give in a bit. So there's no one group that is going to get their way. But I think a compromise can be struck where we can reform the Security Council. And I don't think, you say, are you optimistic? I don't see it happening completely this year. But we must make, I think, a negotiating document on the table for people to begin to negotiate.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.